I need 6.5.
You need 6.5?
Yeah.
I'll give you 7. You want to just make it a 7?
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll make it 7. Okay? Because since you're being gutsy and going with Eli and the Giants,
all right.
Bet. Oh, I don't know where your hands are in. Let's just do that. Oh, I owe you $5 still, huh?
I think that made it back to even.
That made it back to even?
All clean.
What game was that? What was that one? You're up 5.
I'm up 5.
You're up 5.
Yeah. Pete's first assist was to tell me that I'm up $5.
Yes, you're up $5. Yeah. You don't bet against Eli Manning. That's
exactly
what you learn.
Yeah.
Yes. And don't say anything bad about him to John McDonald or he will get mad. Look at him today.
He's all decked out in not only the Giants top, but the old school Nike
Cortez.
Yeah, the red leather.
Yeah, real gangster over here, but he's real happy. Eli won, which is really cool. Definitely. We'll hit that. We got a little different pod today. What's up, first of all? How you doing,
good
man?
Good to see you.
I didn't even get to talk to you yet. You know, what's up? How you doing? Good to see you.
Week 15.
Week 15 in the books. Chris Sims, Paul Burmeister, unbuttoned. We're going to do a little different week this week. There was more to talk about, more playoff implications. So instead of deep diving two games, I went through a lot of just key moments throughout the league. And we're going to hit on some of those. The 49ers game, I mean, we're going to hit on a good chunk of that. Carson Wentz, the game-winning touchdown pass there. Aaron Rodgers, a few plays from that Bears game as far as what the fuck happened. Texans, Titans. So kind of going to go all around, but give you a little bit of all what really happened, nuanced stuff on the big plays in the NFL.
Big fan
yesterday.
Of this, by the way.
Yeah, cool. I think this will be
good,
too.
When news filtered to my house this morning, were doing this.
You're a big fan. You felt good.
Yeah, I liked
it a lot. Okay, good. Yeah. Good. I'm glad you did.
Whatever role you played in that, whether you're saying this is what we're doing.
My role is like there, hey, we have a new idea. And I'm cool. Okay. If you think that's better for the podcast, I'm down.
Right?
I'm down. Yes.
Team player.
And you see here, this is only winners allowed here on the front desk today, right? It's only winners, huh? Nope. Nobody lost in that group.
Maybe the guy in the middle?
Well, the guy in the middle is losing every day. Got to work with Pete Demolitolitis. How can you win when you got to do that? Either way, you're my man, Pete. All right, let's go. Let's get it going.
All right, NFC playoff picture. How about that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Take a quick peek at that. And basically, not a lot changed.
Yeah.
Not a lot of changing going on. I think what you need to know, Seattle and San Francisco, flip-flop from 1-5. They play in the final week of the regular season to come down to that.
Right.
A couple of other big division matchups coming up. Green Bay now at 2, Minnesota at 6. They play next Monday nights. And you have Dallas and Philly both at 7-7. They play on Sunday. So Dallas is 4 right now. Philly on the outside looking in. But basically that'll get figured out in the next couple weeks.
It will. It's all going to get figured out. I mean, right now, if New Orleans wins tonight, we're going to have 3 teams tied at 11-3.
Right.
I don't think that's going to change the seedings as of right now. Because 3-way ties, it's different than if it's just – okay, it's a 2-way tie, which goes then to did you play head-to-head and then goes to conference record. And I need to re-look up what the hell it is for a 3-way tie because I'm not totally sure who will be 1-2 after tonight if the Saints win. I'm not sure. I know the Saints have the head-to-head tiebreaker against Seattle, but like I said, it all changes when there's 3 teams. They don't use exactly the same formula there. Mm-hmm. Either way, 49ers, Seattle is going to get figured out before it's all said and done. And their Week 17 matchup, you mentioned that. And really, the 49ers got another tough game this week against the Rams.
Let's keep it there with the Niners. Yeah. We're going to hit them on a couple different levels,
right.
Just like you mentioned. We'll get to the game-winning play from Matt Ryan to Julio Jones in a moment. But I know you spent some time watching Niners offense against Falcons defense.
Yeah.
And the 49ers offense was so good last week and just so kind of okay yesterday. What happened on that side, Niners offense against the Falcons D?
Yeah, well, again, I think the first thing I always want to hit on with this type of stuff, there's common knowledge here. And maybe where I gave Kyle Shanahan the advantage more in the common knowledge, you know, he did go against Dan Quinn for 2 years and preseason practice, training camp, things like that. His ex-receiver coach, Raheem Morris, is now on the defensive side of the ball in Atlanta. So I think that deserves to be talked about a little bit, those little nuances. I think that's almost a theme of yesterday. It comes up in a few other games that we'll hit on too. But I think the big thing boils down to this as far as you've said it. The 49ers offense, it's been big play. It's been dominant all year. I mean, there's really not a game they haven't moved the ball other than maybe Baltimore. And I would say the weather was pretty much as much of a factor there as the Ravens defense. But other than that, nobody's really stopped the 49ers. I thought Atlanta did about as good a job as I've seen anybody do for 2 reasons. One, didn't allow big plays. Right. That was the biggest thing that jumped out to me. The 49ers are a chunk football team. It's 15-yard run, 20-yard screen, you know, then it's a few plays of 2 and 3 yards, and then all of a sudden, bam, it's a 30-yard play action pass, and that's kind of how they operate. That really didn't happen other than on two plays during this game. And I think one is Atlanta had a really good plan of attack as far as when to play man-to-man in certain formations and when to play zone. They have the team speed, I think, is the biggest thing. I mean, when Atlanta's healthy, and they're still not even totally healthy, but when you start to talk about Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley and Claiborne and then Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, I mean, those are freaky people I just mentioned. For NFL terms, they are truly freaky people. And, you know, the 49ers couldn't get anything going on their edge runs on the offensive side of the ball. That's where they really rip big plays off on a regular basis. They weren't able to do that because of the speed of the middle linebackers. Got whooped up front. There's no other way to say it. Grady Jarrett had his way with the interior part of the offensive line.
You think it's more schematically, and you mentioning that they're underrated defensively, personnel-wise,
right,
anyway?
Yeah.
Or is this a... I give them a pass. They've had massive games every weekend the last month, and this was just an off game.
I'm glad you brought that up, too, because I was going to totally – and I said this on the show this morning with Florio, but, I mean, you know this. This is a real aspect of football. When you go through a three-game stretch of going, this might have been the hardest three games anybody's ever played ever against the opponent's winning percentage and things like that, to then get up, get yourself up for a fourth game –
I think it was actually four games.
Well, it was – well, I mean, I'm just going from that Packers, Ravens,
okay,
Saints,
yep,
right? Those three,
yes,
right there.
Yep.
So you go that, you come out 2-1, very close to being 3-0. It is human nature to go, okay, we made it through there. Oh, let's take a deep breath. We did it. The Falcons are still fighting for their pride in life. Dan Quinn still thinks he can save his job, right? So he's coaching them up there. I mean, Matt Ryan doesn't want to go into the offseason 4-12. It's not like he's going to give up. Neither is freaking Julio Jones or Grady Jarrett and any of them. So this was a big moment for them. And, yeah, there's some personal aspects to this because there's some coaches on the 49ers that were there in Atlanta for their Super Bowl loss and all of that. And I think that's a very real aspect. To be able to get yourself up again to that level, plus let's not forget, 49ers are missing five players,
yes,
starters on defense.
Yep.
And, you know, some of them are major, major players. I mean, D Ford, no DJ Jones. Those are huge, huge misses for them. But I think those are the big things that jumped out to me more than anything.
One question about looking at the numbers and the way the offense just didn't move the way we're used to.
Right.
George Kittle was terrific. I mean, coincidentally, 13 for 134. Just like Julio Jones.
Yes.
But Samuel and Sanders combined for three catches.
Nothing. I know.
Barely over 10 yards per catch.
Yeah.
What did they do strategy-wise, they being the Falcons defensively, to produce that way?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is that the passing offense really never got into a flow or a rhythm, just a drop-back pass offense. One was because of the pass rush. I mean, the stats aren't going to really tell you how good Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley were in a lot of the dropback situations. But Garoppolo was constantly under duress. I think that's the one thing I look. They had a good feel for what they were trying to do in the dropback pass game. And I can always tell that by the way they were, like, passing people off in zone coverages. Like, oh, this guy went vertical, and they were right away looking for the underneath guy who might be running the slant. You know, they're clearing it out and running a slant, and the guy's right there. So they had some little telltale signs like that. And I thought, you know, did a good job of mixing man and zone. Like, we're not affected by the fake speed sweeps or the run and fake reverse. They had a good game plan in some of those where I feel like they dabbled in some man-to-man where they said, okay, we're not going to let, like, play zone where, okay, he's going this way. Now the middle linebacker's all over the place because he's like, wait, they fake this way. Oh, gosh, they fake that way. Oh, no, it's a play-action pass, and now they're out of position. They kind of just said when they got into 21 personnel, 12 personnel, the 49ers, the Atlanta Falcons just made it simple and just said, we're going to play you man-to-man. And the guy who goes in motion is the guy. We're going to have a guy covering him, and he's man-to-man, and that's it. And then we won't get out of our gaps as far as run game is concerned. And like, you know, we talked about, they got players too.
Is that the best lesson that the Rams and Seahawks who are coming up for the Niners can take away from watching that
tape? I think so. I think so. And I think the Rams can maybe duplicate it better than the Seahawks. The Seahawks can't play man. They're scary that way. So that's going to be an issue for them when it comes to playing. You know, they're going to have to crowd the line of scrimmage, put five defensive linemen in, things like that. That's what they did the first time around. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, realistic to think they can do what they did the first time around. But the Rams can duplicate some of that for sure.
Let's get into the key play.
Yeah.
Game-winning touchdown, five seconds left.
Right.
Atlanta's down 22-17. The formation, they have three wide receivers to the left.
Yep.
And Julio Jones lines up in the inside slots and I believe goes in motion.
Goes in motion across.
To the right. And
right.
then things get really interesting.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is really interesting. So, like you said, they motion Julio Jones over there. Austin Hooper is standing up as the tight end to the right side. And really, as you go this, I got a little B-roll film here on if anybody wants to check this out on the Instagram. But the big thing is Julio lines up going across the motion like you talked about. They're trying to double Julio. They're trying to in and out him as far as one guy, 41 Mosley, has got him if he goes outside. And then 36, Marcel Harris, who, if you could just rewind it back just a little bit again. Marcel Harris, as you could see, I'm pointing him right there. He is the safety who's head up on Austin Hooper. They have a linebacker covering Austin Hooper. All right? Now, the other two, 36 and 41, are inning out Julio Jones. But 36 stacks the linebacker who's covering Austin Hooper. So then Austin Hooper releases upfield, and instead of just picking one guy, mm-hmm. he gets to pick two guys. And then there's no one there for the shallow cross for Julio Jones. So really, I think the most egregious mistake on this play, more than anything, is the alignment of Marcel Harris, the backup safety to Jaquaski Tartt. Because they're doubling the slot to the left side. And if you look here on the play itself, 83, the slot receiver, I always forget this guy's name. Oh, yeah, Russell Gage. He is being doubled as well. You see there's a bracket coverage mm-hmm. on him.
Yeah.
Jimmy Ward then realizes, oh, Matt Ryan's not looking at him anymore. And he comes off and makes a bam-bam play on Julio Jones as he catches the ball right at the goal line. As we know, he just gets in. But this was the proper defensive call. This was just bad execution, bad alignment. And again, I think it's on Marcel Harris. You know, because think about it this way. He has to line up, and there's a still frame of Julio just getting in the end zone. But for that type of alignment, all right, like if Julio was right there mm-hmm. and you're 41
yeah.
and I'm 36, yeah. you can't stack 41. I need to get off over here almost.
When you say
play
stack,
that way.
You mean?
Like playing right directly yep. behind the linebacker who's playing Hooper man-to-man.
Yeah.
Right? He almost – so now Hooper takes that inside release – and now he gets stuck a part of the wash there instead of he should have been inside already and just waiting for Julio Jones to come.
Right.
Because that's all they're doing is going, okay, we're going to in and out him. 41, if he goes out, you got him.
Right.
If he goes in, I got him. 36.
And it looked like that communication. That was my first question.
Yeah.
When 41 went with Julio Jones
in motion.
From left to right, there was communication between three people.
He does his hands like this.
They were all kind of looking at each other,
right.
and they gave some kind of nonverbal
right.
of what was supposed to happen.
Yes.
What do you think that was?
I think that was what he was basically telling them. Like, we're bracketing. And if you go back, Pete, go back to that little our little Instagram clip there, because you're exactly right. As Mosley goes in motion with Julio Jones, he is giving this motion of his hands, and he's mm-hmm. talking to 36. He's letting him know, and 36 is going, okay, hey, you man up on 81. And because of that, he doesn't ever get back inside, because I think at first they were going to double 81 to that side, mm-hmm. and then they changed it to where, oh, wait, Julio's over here. We have to double Julio and in and out him. And I think Marcel Harris aligns wrong, gets picked by Austin Hooper and the linebacker covering Austin Hooper, mm-hmm. and then he can't get there and makes it an easy throw
was
for Matt Ryan.
Was 41 who went with Jones in motion, was he supposed to go with him man-to-man?
Well,
he
can go with him, but no, he's really sitting there waiting for him in case he runs like the fake shallow cross and comes back out. Right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to follow too aggressively.
And by alignment, that's lines up, no pun intended to what you're saying, because
yeah.
he's about a yard and a half outside of him, waiting for him to come outside.
Exactly right. He's waiting for it. They're thinking, oh, Julio might run a little option route, mm-hmm. something like that, where he comes off. And I think the funny thing about this play is, you know, Dan Quinn was the defense coordinator of the Seahawks, and this is the play that the Seahawks ran to try to beat the New England Patriots, and Malcolm Butler intercepted. I mean, it was basically the same thing, except, of course, Brandon Browner wasn't there to jam the pick guy and ruin the whole play. But I think that was the biggest thing altogether. And even to throw that in, one little more wrinkle to this whole conversation – the other big play earlier in the drive, which was a Julio Jones like deep cross that got them down there close, they were trying to double Julio there too. And The safety didn't come aggressively down to double him and let him catch the ball at 12 yards, and then he broke the tackle mm-hmm. and ran for another 15 or 20 yards and put him inside the 20-yard line. So more execution down the stretch from the 49ers defense where, yeah, they were spotted a 19-10 lead, but it's Atlanta Falcons, and Matt Ryan, he doesn't give a damn. He's going to keep firing, right. And I give them credit for fighting that way.
How about a little lesson in why you shouldn't gamble? Okay, part one today, there are a couple of lessons. Over-under was 49.5.
Right.
Two touchdowns in the last 5 seconds.
That's unreal, especially the last one. I mean, that's like a heartbreaker. A heartbreaker.
And it happened again in a different
NFC the Eagles, Redskins. Well. Yeah, well, yeah. I'm sure I know. That's why I do not want to gamble or be a part of that, because I would absolutely – I go crazy that I got this wrong without any money on it. I mean, I picked the 49ers, and I was, like, pissed off. I can't imagine if I had bet, like, $1,000 or $500 on it. Holy shit, I'd be going crazy.
Pete, one more time. Thursday Picks Podcast.
Podcast. That's where we get it at. Mike, me and Florio. Yep, yeah. That's where we do it. I mean, that was one of my bets of the week, so I got that one wrong. There's no way to hide from that. But I think that was the big moments of that football game
in general.
You know, and I think really a great understanding of what the 49ers offense wanted to do play action pass-wise. You know, they had a good feel, you know. And, again, it's hard for me to sit here and break down exactly to tell you, like, you know, there's no magic thing I'm going to give you. It's just I could tell by watching film to go,
there was some familiarity.
Oh, in these splits, when they run this play action, they were coached up on look for this route or look for that route. And they always seem to be in the right areas without me getting too technical or X-E and O-E with this.
Shouldn't the Rams and Seahawks have familiar, the same kind of thing, because it'll be the second time they played them?
Well, yeah, there definitely is, 100%. There's definitely a lot of familiarity there in general, even with the Seahawks, you know, not necessarily the Rams, there definitely is, because McVay's from Shanahan too. So there's going to be that knowledge. There's a lot of different things. And we'll get into other games, because the Rams-Cowboys game, there's a ton of common knowledge and coaching crossover there as well, to where that's the chess match within the chess match of football that I really enjoy watching. But, yeah, I think Atlanta played tougher. They were the more energized, fresh-looking team on the field. They kind of took the fight to the 49ers, beat them up front offensively, and just made a few plays. You know, the Falcons offense just made a few plays just to get them over the hump to win the football game.
Ready for pop quiz?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Who has caught the most wide-open touchdown this season?
I want to say it was yesterday with Tavon Austin.
That would make sense.
Okay.
Why we're asking.
Is that
right
true?
Now.
Okay. Yeah. That's the next one. Yep. Okay.
He had a picture of it. He was, like, literally the only one on the screen.
No. Yeah. It was basically your deep pick play. It's two deep crosses like this, and I think it was Blake Jarwin running the other cross, and the two Ram defenders ran into each other. And that left him wide open, and, that
works out perfectly.
That works out perfectly.
The offensive player doesn't even have to do the pick.
What? Like
their own teammates pick each other
up.
You're
right. It was amazing.
He was open by 16.8 yards.
Jeez.
Then that counts as wide open.
Yeah, that was an ass whooping, and we'll hit that in a little bit.
And we're not going to spend a lot of time with the Cowboys, but they snapped a 3-game losing streak.
Right.
And did it in impressive fashion.
Yep.
I feel like we've been all over the board with them. Hey, they look great.
Right.
Love what they're doing.
Right.
They're terrible. What's going on here? Like, there's not much middle ground for them.
There's not. They've feasted on the poor, and they have lost to the rich. That's basically how I would say the Cowboys.
What are you counting the Rams as there?
Well, the Rams, okay, this was a team that I would consider was the rich, and they finally won one against the rich, which they should have. And, I mean, while we're there, I'm just going to hit on this game real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's the things that jumped out to me. The Rams offense got dominated up front in a lot of different pass game, run game. Early on, Goff missed a few throws here and there. You know, bootlegs, things like that weren't as slam dunk as they were in other previous weeks that got them going. The biggest thing I wanted to see was this, and I think I've told you this before. Back from the divisional playoff game last year, the Rams cracked the code on the Dallas defense. They got them basically in some alignments and said, ooh, you can't stop this run in this alignment. You can't stop it. Schematically, you're screwed. And they just kept doing it over and over and over again. And the Cowboys counteracted that in this game with their defensive tackles. You know, they wanted to run to the guard bubble in the divisional playoff game, right? I mean, you know what that means, right?
Yeah.
So guard bubble, the shade nose, they were always running at that side, which basically meant they could, like, double the nose tackle and then get somebody up to the linebacker, like, every play. And they ran inside zone and exposed the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas changed their fronts in this game. They sometimes played 2-3 techniques. Sometimes they squeezed it down and played bare. They never let the Rams and McVay get in this, like, oh, we're going to run to the bubble. Oh, the bubble's weak. We'll shift the tight ends over there because you guys don't shift your fronts. And now we'll run to the bubble and we're back in the power strength. The Cowboys mixed it up this time, which I thought was really the biggest key to them winning the football game, or at least their defense dominating the game.
Oh, you're getting back into a what the fuck happened with a key play from a key game this weekend.
Right.
Eagles 37, Redskins 27.
Right.
Let's get right to the game winner. 32 seconds left.
Yep.
Redskins are up 27-24. First and goal for the Eagles from the four.
First and goal for the Eagles on the four. And you know, as we're sitting here together, I'm going to pull this up. I mean, well, why not just watch it together so we can do it? But
first of all, they were really quick out of the huddle, which I think helped
so,
them a whole lot.
100%. So here's the beauty of this play. The beauty of this play is the Eagles already ran this play for a touchdown earlier in the game. They ran in the start of the fourth quarter. He throws a touchdown pass to Zach Ertz in the right flat for a touchdown. And the beauty to what you just said is they didn't line up properly on that play either, the Redskins. And he threw a wide-open touchdown pass because the Redskins didn't line up and were confused. Well, you're exactly right. The Eagles kind of break the huddle fast. They get lined up really quickly. And to your point, they're still trying to – the Redskins are still trying to figure out, wait, who the hell's got who? Who's got what? Dallas Goedert's to the left. Then there's a bunch formation to the right. On the inside of that bunch is Zach Ertz, the point man, the middle of the three – is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and then number 84, Ward, is the outside guy. And Carson Wentz runs a little weak side play action. It's Spider 2. You got everybody out there knows, like, Spider 2, why banana, right? But John Gruden. Well, this is Spider 2 Buckeye is what we would call this in our offense. This is basically what this is. And he says, set hut, and as you said, the Redskins are still lining up as he's saying this is the ball's being snapped. And they're confused with coverage. And on the snap, three guys cover Zach Ertz. I mean, three. I mean, 53, Landon Collins, and Preston Smith all go. Who the hell is 53? Is that, I gotta look that up. I'm blanking on his name. I gotta look. Hold on. It's gonna. All right. Well, Pete'll look.
Pete'll look, yeah.
Pete'll look. But
keep playing it out. As you mentioned, it's left hash. They've got a bunch formation to the right.
Right. Little token play action to the right side, and he just does a good job of really throwing a great ball. The coverage isn't bad. Josh Norman does a good job.
I thought the coverage was really good.
Yes.
I mean, Josh Norman, who was lined up about a yard and a half or 2 yards outside and potentially could have been picked if he didn't, in a savvy way, get across that pick, he made up a lot of ground.
Yes, he did.
And if Carson would have thrown just a regular ball, probably the way they practice it
Monday
through Friday, I think it's picked because he's making a
ground. And he's coming underneath it a little
terrific
bit.
Terrific feel and touch to just know to loft it like that.
Right.
And it made me wonder, like, do they practice it that way?
Yeah.
Or is that just an in-the-moment recognition, I'm going to put it up because this is the only way it can be.
That's a good question. I don't know either. I can't give you the answer there, but I do know Carson Wentz off his back foot throws a ball high and out in front of him and just lets him run and go get the ball.
In a way that you don't normally practice.
No, you're right.
I don't think.
No, you're right. I don't think it's something you normally practice. Maybe he's practiced it during the year just because he's gone, okay, I've sat here and made this throw when he's open a million different times. I'm good there. Let me start messing around and acting like I got pressure on me or making different types of throws. But in general, 53 is Bostic, who we talked about. Preston Smith and Landon Collins all go with Zach Ertz into the flat. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is covered by number 41. And you said it. Josh Norman does a great job. Now, the other thing I want to hit on about this play, and hold on 1 second, I'm just going to pull this up, was I'm still not sure if the Redskins aligned properly. I don't know if they did, because I would love to show you the play from earlier on. But, you know, 35, Monte Nicholson, I don't know why, but he's over here, For some reason, covering nobody. There's a man on the tight end. I don't know what he's doing. Well, I'm guessing he should be the free safety. And on the play earlier in the game, it's the same type of defense alignment, and he is the free safety.
On the earlier play, the same play that went for a touchdown?
Yeah.
At the earlier point in the game, was it quick out of the huddle as well?
It was. And
it was about second and a half from breaking the huddle to running the play.
And I'm going to pull it off to you. Here it is. So here's the same exact play, second and five, right? Watch, they're going to break the huddle pretty quickly. Here we go. And, oh, that's not it. I'm one play, still one more play. Hold on, let me get there. It's this play coming right now. But it's the same type of thing. And I'm pretty sure, and I didn't see it live on TV, but here it is. They're lined up in it. Same formation, right, Paul?
Exactly.
I mean, everything's
thing.
The same. Same
even on
people.
The left hash.
Right? Yeah. Left hash, same people in the game. J.J. Arcega, Whiteside's the point man. Ward's outside. Ertz is inside. They're having trouble lining up. Okay, they get lined up. They still mess it up. Now, that time, nobody covered Ertz.
Right.
There's three guys covering no one, and Ertz scored a touchdown. So, obviously, they found a little flaw within that scheme itself, and knowing probably that they want to double Ertz.
Right.
And if you get out of the huddle quickly and put them on the inside of a bunch, it's going to make it very stressful for them to figure that out in a hurry. And that was the difference in the ball game in general. Hey, the Eagles, they're tough. They're gritty. You know, got the run game going, which they got to keep playing behind. I think that's the number one strength of their team besides Carson Wentz, because their offense is, as we've talked about a lot, it's whoosh, Zach Ertz for six, whoosh, Dallas Goedert for seven. And then it's, oh, there's Miles Sanders or Boston Scott coming out of the backfield in a wheel route or a little flare route or something. That's all they got in the pass game. That's all they got. There's nothing else going to scare you.
Right.
So they need to have a run game and dominate the line of scrimmage, I think, if they want to beat teams like Dallas and maybe make a run in the playoffs.
And in this little two-game win streak that they have, how many times would you guess Carson Wentz has thrown the ball?
Oh, I don't even sure.
It's
yesterday,
93.
Is it that many?
Holy
crap.
Times.
Yeah, I was going to say like high 70s.
Like you, I'm a fan. Like he's fun to watch.
Right.
Even when his numbers aren't that great,
you
know he can make some kind of play.
He can carry the team sometimes.
Whether it's with his courage or the feel like that.
Right.
Fun quarterback to watch.
He is.
93 throws.
That's insane. And I just don't know
if
that's –
doesn't seem like it's sustainable.
It's not sustainable. That's exactly right. I think that's the thing I would say. That's not sustainable against the really good teams or the cream of the crop in the NFL.
Or even against Dallas in this big game.
That's what I'm – well, I mean, as we saw yesterday, Dallas, again, is – it's you see. They're cream of the crop talent-wise. Can they just put it all together?
Right.
And that's going to be the big question this week. They're going to be more talented than the Philadelphia Eagles on the field on Sunday. They definitely will be. One last thing to say about that game before we move on.
Yes.
Best game by Dwayne Haskins in his early NFL career.
Yeah,
he really played well. He made some big throws. He had a few nice little runs. So that was something to build on for him. I think that was the first game I came away going, okay, I see it, Mr. Haskins. There you go. That's why they drafted you in the top 15 or top 16, whatever it was. And good for him.
Why You Shouldn't Gamble Part 2.
Yeah.
Ready for this one?
Yeah.
Had the final touchdown you just talked about.
Right.
And then that just backdoor garbage in the final seconds. Philly was -4.5. So, I mean, that's how they came through.
That's unbelievable. So, -4.5, it's a push, right? Was it just the Redskins would have won, would have covered? Okay. And, I mean, that's unbelievable. 31-27. Wait, the Eagles were the underdogs by four?
Yeah.
Oh, by 4.5. Sorry.
Four and a half.
I didn't realize it was 4.5. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes, they got it covered and then have that happen. That's unreal. Yep. Everyone can thank Dwayne Haskins, who lost money for him pitching that ball.
We have a theme here. We're going to follow the same template. We go from why you shouldn't gamble into another pop quiz.
Yes.
Okay. In the NFC, how many Seahawks wins have come by 8 points or fewer?
I mean, I'm really not going to look this up. I mean, I don't know if they're – I want to say none. I want to say every game they've had has been 8 points. So there's one. Hold on. Don't tell me who it is.
I don't even know which one. It was early in the season.
It was early in the season?
8 wins in a row. Their last 8 wins have all come one score or less.
That's unbelievable. Oh, Arizona Cardinals. They beat them 27-10 in week 4.
Yeah.
That's the only one.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That's truly unbelievable.
You see it as a plus or a minus that they're winning this way?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. I think ultimately when we're putting Seattle against the cream of the crop in the NFL, I think it's a minus.
Yeah.
I think it's a minus. I think
when you say cream of the crop in the NFC,
even in the whole NFL, I still think the Saints and the 49ers are ahead of the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay.
Yes. So I look at it that way. And, yeah, what it tells me, too, is, you know, they're not capable of putting teams away that are lesser than them, just like we saw yesterday.
They had a great chance to yesterday.
They're 31-10, yeah. And you're going, here they go. But what was the problem? Their defense can't make a stop. They can't. They can't cover people man-to-man. They're a little predictable that way. And if they don't have a healthy Clowney and Ezekiel Ansah just to ruin the game up front, they're in deep shit. There's no other way to say it.
Right.
Yeah. That's what scares me about Seattle.
And they've got the Niners coming up in the final week
right. Of
the regular season. Back to what the fuck happened
yep. In
the NFC. Packers-Bears. Green Bay wins 21-13.
Yeah.
Let's go back to when it was scoreless. First quarter, Green Bay has fourth down and four.
Right. Plus
29.
Right.
And Aaron Rodgers with perhaps his best throw of the game to Devontae Adams.
Probably. Well, it probably had even his best throw of the game might have been actually a few plays earlier when Valdez-Scantling dropped a wide-open post down the middle and whiffed on the ball. That's where I'm – and I don't feel like we saw him much after that because I think they were probably like, oh, okay, this game's too much for him. Let's get him out of there. But, yeah, so fourth down comes about. It's fourth and – what was it?
Fourth
two?
And four, I think.
Fourth and two, fourth and four, okay. Either way, doesn't matter. We got the point.
Fourth and short. Yeah.
Fourth and short. And they come out originally in a 2x2 set.
Yep.
Where it's Graham to the right, Lazard to the right, and then it's, I think, Geronimo Allison and Devontae Adams to the left, right? So it's 2x2. They call timeout. I bet you Aaron Rodgers didn't love that formation. To me, when you play a 2x2 set, just to take you into the quarterback world a little bit, the problem with 2x2 sets at times is, and you would know this too, is it's easy to disguise things. Yeah. You don't know which guy, which way. Wait, is the guy over Jimmy Graham, who's the slot to my right, is he blitzing? Or is the guy over, you know, Geronimo Allison, the slot to my left, is he blitzing? So you can't tell because the safeties can kind of hold it to the last second because it's two to the right and two to the left. They don't have to kind of show their hand. So that was probably the first thing that jumped out to me to why maybe they called timeout. The other thing is they were showing the old double A gap, right? Mm. So double A gap, if something's over the middle, you know, there's a good chance they're going to drop out, and now Aaron Rodgers isn't going to have anything he likes. So either way, they call the timeout, they come back out of the timeout, and they're in a totally different formation. They're in a 3x1 set where Jimmy Graham's to the right, Rodgers in the shotgun, he has Jamal Williams offset to his right, mm-hmm. and then he has three receivers to the left. Lazard being the inside of the three, Devontae Adams the slot, and Geronimo Allison on the outside. And that is a great formation because there's more telltale signs to what a team is doing coverage-wise. If all three corners are over to the other side with the receivers, you know it's man-to-man. If there's one corner backside still with Jimmy Graham,
right. It's
a zone coverage.
What were they doing?
So they in this place were playing a kind of a match zone, all right? And they were in a tough spot here either way. They really were.
And I thought it looked like man free.
It could be. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is a tough one. You're right. I don't know. And this is where I'm not sure. Jackson, the safety, mm-hmm. is playing the inside receiver, Lazard, which maybe they like that matchup on him instead of matching him up with Jimmy Graham, and they left Fuller on Jimmy Graham. So it might be man-to-man. Either way, if it was a match zone or a man, it plays the same at the end of the day. So you might be right. It might be a man-to-man. Mm-hmm. But Rodgers has set Hutt, and he's got Buster Screen over Devontae Adams, and Devontae Adams just makes a nice little wiggle off the line of scrimmage and then just presses it vertical.
Set him up really
and just
well.
Beats him, right?
Yeah.
And just beats him with speed, and then Rodgers throws a piss missile down the seam,
right?
And it's touchdown Green Bay, and it's that simple.
I thought two things on my screen got beat. I thought, number one, fourth and four, he's lined up a little bit to the inside of Adams, and I bet he's thinking he's going to run some kind of under route, whether it's 2 yards
under. A slant route, something like that.
Yes, something inside because they only need four.
Agreed.
So I thought he was lined up to play that instead of play deep.
I think that's very fair.
And then it was a terrific move. Adams set him up really, really well.
Really, really well. And I'm going to pull up the play so we can sit here and watch.
I thought Rodgers leveraged that they only needed four. And knowing that they'd be playing for four,
I just
had a guy run right.
I think exactly right. I think that's the big thing. I think Rodgers was scared that they were going to have linebackers underneath who were going to buzz out of a blitz look. They might double Devontae Adams, and he might have nowhere to go. So he said, let me put me in a position to where I can tell their coverage and stress their defense out a little bit.
And
right. I think they're in man.
They're in man.
Yep.
With a free safety.
Yes.
20 yards in center field. So now off the TV copy that I watched, I didn't know he was that deep.
Right.
which adds to the question, how does someone run right down the middle of the field
with
a defense playing man free and the guy's 20 yards off
the ball? Well, when he knows his free safety is man-to-man against a wide receiver, Iowa State's finest, Lazard, I bet you and they run three verticals, and the first vertical, Lazard is the inside of the three receivers to the left, runs, you know, the inside vertical there is almost like a deep cross, so that keeps him there. So as he comes off the ball, I think that just keeps him there just for a split second, but I would argue, hey, I'm with you. I think that if I'm the free safety or if I'm Chuck Pagano here, I'm going, get over to Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
Just cheat over to Devontae. Make him throw it to Alan Lazard. But the problem is in that coverage, they are really exposed with this guy if he does cheat over, right? He's got all that Lazard as the inside deep crosser would have a lot of green grass with nobody around him.
I think maybe the free safety also fell victim to the thought that
they only
need four.
Yeah.
They're not going to throw it into the end zone.
Right. I don't disagree with you. I mean, he kind of takes off like he's going to take off towards Devontae Adams. And then I think Rodgers' eyes stayed down the middle a little bit, and he stutters for a second and regains himself and then goes, oh, gosh, he's about to look to Devontae Adams and tries to get over there. And that's HaHa Clinton Dix, who's seen this in real life before in practice when he used to play for Green Bay and was probably like, damn, that motherfucker's done that to me before. But yeah, that was just a phenomenal throw and great trust by LaFleur and Rodgers to be on the same page.
I also wondered if at the snap, like when he comes out of the huddle, if Aaron thinks he's going to throw to the right. He's got Jimmy Graham getting 1 yard more than he needs on a little out route. He's got the running back underneath him. That, you know, something he saw at the snap, and it looks like he might have done something non-verbally
I know.
To the left.
Yeah, he gives a little, like, touch to his ear hole, which, you know, I don't know. Could be mean all go. Yeah. Could be totally mean nothing, where he just goes, I'm going to give you guys a bullshit signal here just to throw them off and whoever's preparing for us next week.
It's a ballsy read and throw when you only need four.
It's a really ballsy read and throw. And this is what Green Bay does. This is where Green Bay... You know, a little bit like Seattle, where I want to go, they're just not always that impressive with the way they win games, but they win. And the biggest way they win is they jump out on you early with a few cool little game plan wrinkles. And then 12, he always overwhelms the defense because all of a sudden, you know, oh, well, we got him stopped. And, oh, shit, he threw a laser by us and all this. And then all of a sudden you look up, you go, damn, we're down 14-0.
Right.
And that's really what they've done to everybody in their wins.
Which is good, but then are you concerned that they don't really do much after that?
No, they do. They run out of tricks. The game plan runs out. You know, there's only so many game plan plays you can come up with on a weekly basis to where then you have to get back to your meat and potatoes. And I don't think their meat and potatoes is, all that special. Right? It's just an average cook in the kitchen there for the meat and potatoes. Added to the fact that we've talked about it, there's just not great talent to scare you either. So that combination alone is going to lead to some dull moments. And the Bears, you know, they kind of settled in and made life tough on Green Bay's offense.
You know what wasn't a dull moment at the end? Like, there was a second there. I'm talking about the final play with all the laterals where it should have worked for Chicago.
No,
they had
doubt.
That set up perfectly.
He had it.
Inside the 10, if he just pitches to his right, it's a walk-in touchdown.
It's a walk-in touchdown to Allen Robinson.
I think we have some pictures. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, there we go. Yeah.
It didn't look this good in practice, and I wonder how much they actually did run it in practice.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it wasn't that open when they ran it in practice.
I doubt it. And these are kind of the things that, like, you practice maybe at the start of the season a few times. You probably do a walkthrough version on Saturday, like, once a week. But my favorite part is once he does not pitch it, that he goes on. I love watching Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller's reaction to basically say, like, hey, like, what the fuck? Because I think this is what's his name? Jesper Horsted, right, from Princeton?
There you go.
He never looked to the right. And Allen Robinson's going to have a walk-in touchdown, like you said. The Bears, I'll tell you another big play in this game. The Bears got a roughing the punter call on Cordell Patterson early on in the game that would have gave them the ball a little past midfield. The referees blew the call. I don't know what they did, but that was a huge moment in the game too, I thought. But Packers find a way to win as usual.
Elsewhere in the NFC North, another team finding a way to win. The Vikings 39, Chargers 10. This was the kind of game, and as I was looking at the matchups, I said between Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan, one of these two guys, if not both, is going to pull off an upset today. And kudos to the Vikings for making it look easy, producing 7 turnovers.
No doubt.
And winning by 29 points. And ask Green Bay about going out to the Chargers.
Yeah, right.
And making it look easy.
You're right. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, I picked the Chargers to win the game.
Did you?
I did, because I kind of had the same thought you did. This Vikings defense is not that great. Chargers offense is special. Chargers offense can move the ball on them, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
They've been running the ball better lately. I mean, I was worried about Rivers making dumb mistakes, but I thought, okay, I mean, gosh, he's had so many of them. He won't do it again. You know, the Chargers defense, they're top five in football. So I took this as an upset. I mean, it was there to be had.
Yeah.
It's 12-10 going into the half.
Yep.
It's 12-10.
Yeah.
It's 12-10, and the Chargers had already turned the ball over three times at that point. It's 12-10, and they're in field goal range. And I'm going, oh, geez, even though they fucked up this whole first half, they're going to have a chance to go in 13-12 or 17-12 here. I mean, as soon as I said that in the room, it was strip sack, fumble, Daniel Hunter. They pick it up, touchdown, and the game was never the same because then the Chargers came out in the second half and continued to turn the ball over.
Daniel Hunter, defensive player of the year. What do you think? Yay or nay?
I'm going to say nay. I think he's in the short list of convos of people there, but – I don't think I could put him in front of Stephon Gilmore.
Which we'll get to.
Yep. And I don't think I still could put him in front of Aaron Donald. And I think if I was going to give him, like, and just other pass rushers, I think Shaquille Barrett's had a better year as just a pure pass rusher. That's where I'd probably just argue against that. He's had a really good year, Daniel Hunter. I'll also say he's feasted on the poor a little bit himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a lot of like, okay, we haven't seen you in 2 weeks, and now you got three sacks in a game. We haven't seen you in 2 or 3 weeks, now you got four sacks in a game.
Yeah.
So that, to me, doesn't always scream defensive player of the year.
Vikings-Packers next Monday night will go a long way to deciding that NFC
playoff
picture. A little
definitely
more clarity
will.
There in the next couple of weeks. Let's move on to the AFC.
Yep.
Let's start by looking at the AFC playoff picture there. Baltimore still number one. Patriots still in position for a bye. The AFC South, that's where there was some movement yesterday. Big game between the Texans and Titans. Houston now at number four, and Tennessee out of the picture, sitting there game behind at 8-6. Still thinking playoffs, but they are, for now, out of the hunt. So, right into a what the fuck happened with Houston and Tennessee. Let's pick it up.
Right.
Kind of not with one play, but a situation.
Okay.
About 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter,
right.
All tied at 14.
Yeah, right.
From that point on, it was pretty much all Texans. What happened?
It was. And it was all Texans, and it was all Deshaun Watson, you're so freaking awesome.
Right.
And DeAndre Hopkins with a little Carlos Hyde sprinkled in.
Which play do you like the best?
Well, gosh. You know, I think the play I like the best were some of the plays where I wrote four plays down.
You got three
of them. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, again, it's 14-14, right? Deshaun Watson, they're going in to score and make it 21-7. He throws in a rare interception in the end zone. Tennessee Titans answer back, make it 14-14 to what you're saying, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Texans got the ball. It's a 14-14 tie, and they run a little play-action pass.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, this is the Will Fuller effect. This is how much more dangerous they are with him on the field. They run a little play-action pass where Kenny Stills comes in motion. It's kind of the fake speed sweep. Fake the inside zone to the right to Carlos Hyde. Will Fuller's on the right in a tight split. He runs a post. And then DeAndre Hopkins on a tight split on the left side runs the deep cross. This is a go-to play for mm-hmm. them. But it's tough to stop when you can run the ball and you have some of the talented guys they have. So he hits that pass. Bam. Huge completion.
And that was Mahomes-ish in the sense it's 35 yards.
I know.
As he's falling out of bounds. Deep cross at 20. Okay, nice job.
Right,
35 yards.
He's a phenomenal talent. I mean, he really is.
Yeah.
Watson and Hopkins are phenomenal talent. And, you know, I think the big thing that I took away from this is more than anything is, there was a few good design game plan plays here, but it really just came down to the two best players on the field were mm-hmm. 10-4, and they just made it happen.
Right.
So they get that big completion, and you're going, okay, there they go. Now they're in field goal range. All right, so three plays later, it's 3rd and 8.
Yep.
And now they got Hopkins in the slot. They double Hopkins, and it's a 3-man rush and basically have two spies there.
Three.
Maybe three?
Looked like three.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? I should pull this up again either way. But they have people there accounted for Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
And you're going, uh-oh. And it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because he makes an unbelievable scramble.
Yeah.
And gets what? 12, 14 yards?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah,
and it's first
down.
Got
the first down on 3rd and 8. And I read it, and maybe it was only two. Maybe somebody else just ended up there. But I thought they had three assigned. Hey, just in case he keeps it and runs himself. You three are just here.
Yes.
We have two or three spies waiting for him in case he runs.
Right.
And he still got the first down.
He still got the first down.
And it wasn't like it was backup defensive linemen who were spying. I had it as two linebackers and a defensive back.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to it. I think it is. I think you're right. I think it's a line. I thought it was a linebacker and a defensive back. Here it is. It's kind of a – oops, sorry. Let me pull it towards you here a little bit. Am I on the right play? I think
yes,
I am. Yeah, here we go. So they're doing it – you know, Hopkins is
– they're showing blitz.
Showing blitz. Hopkins is to the left. You can see there's communication between, I believe, Logan Ryan there and Bayard to basically in and out DeAndre Hopkins. Watson snaps the ball. He's in no back in the backfield. It's an empty set. They keep the tight end to block, so they have six blockers. It ends up being a three-man rush to what you're saying. And you're right. There's three guys there. You know, two, I think, are looking for him. I don't even know. Someone might have messed up because they ended up only rushing two.
That's
I got to think
two.
Maybe there should probably be one more rusher. But to your point, they got Hopkins doubled, and they're going, we're not going to let Deshaun Watson run and beat us.
Right.
Right. Yeah, well, okay, it looks cool. It's all cool on a chalkboard until you get out there in real life.
Yeah.
And number four is just faster than your guys and quicker than your guys. And he rips off a big run. Next play is Carlos Hyde bouncing it outside for a touchdown, and it's 21-14.
Right.
Titans get the ball back. They have a chance. They're kind of moving the ball a little bit. They're around midfield, and –
I think they go three and out.
They go three and out. And on third down, Tannehill maybe has a chance to throw the Y out to 86. What's his name? Finker or whatever it is.
Yes.
And he kind of gets jammed at the line of scrimmage. Ferkser, excuse me.
Ivy League guy, yeah.
And I think Tannehill kind of got off of him a little quick when he saw him get jammed at the line of scrimmage. They punt the ball back. And okay, you know what time it is. It's Deshaun Watson time once again.
Right.
And really all that happens here now.
And this is about a 35-yard pass.
Yeah, this to me was, another huge play. You're right. So they get into what, in West Coast terms, this would be west-right slot, pass 96, Seattle, X-dagger. And basically they're running a play-action pass. He's running two tight ends to the right. He fakes the run to the right. There's two receivers to the left. The inside receiver just runs kind of like a post. And then Hopkins is on the outside going to run like a 20-yard in cut.
Yeah.
Well, they're playing kind of like underneath man coverage to where he's not going to win on the in cut. Watson starts scrambling. Hopkins adjusts and runs to the sidelines. And then Watson on the full run to his left throws a BB.
Right.
And it's a completion for, I don't know how many yards that went for. What, 25 maybe? 20, something like that?
Yeah, I've got 26.
26 yards. So you got that. And then.
You know what's cool about the three Deshaun plays that you just pointed out? Backing up to the first one, the 35-yard deep cross route. That's precision passing with rare talent that far down the field.
Yes, okay, right.
So that's number one.
Right.
The second one was just incredible athleticism to beat the guys who were spying on him on third and eight. And the next one is
a combination of both. Yeah, you're right.
So in those three plays, you've got him beating you in three completely different ways.
Three completely different ways. That's why he's special. And you know, again, I know we've beat this to death, but they're just a different team when Will Fuller's on there. Because it just he complements DeAndre Hopkins just the right way. And it just makes it hard on the defense to go, ooh, it's a big moment. What do we do? Who do we take away? Mm-hmm. Who do we leave on an island man-to-man? Because what happened, too, is on the next third down, right, a few plays later, they get in an empty formation once again, and they got Hopkins to the left in the slot, which they love to do. They love to put Hopkins in the left of the slot. And they have Will Fuller on the right on the inside three of the receivers there. And I think the Tennessee Titans said, wait, the hell with it. We're not going to double them. We're going to play a zone coverage and all keep our eyes towards Deshaun Watson because I think they're afraid he might run or do something like that. So let's make him make a throw. Well, I mean, Will Fuller runs a little what we call return route, like fakes a shallow cross, comes out, and Hopkins runs like the inside go route, a little bender post, and Watson puts it right on him, and they get him in field goal range, and they kick a field goal, and it's 24-14, and, you know, that was pretty much all she wrote.
I wanted to ask you one question about the other side. I know we're not deep diving
this.
Yeah,
it's all right.
But Tannehill and Derrick Henry had been so off the charts with their consistency and high level of production.
Yeah.
Both of them played fine.
Yeah.
But considerable step back from what we got used to in the last month to 5 to 6 weeks.
Sure.
What credit do you give the Houston defense for allowing that or preventing them from what they had been?
Well, the Houston defense made some plays. The one thing I always say about Houston, even though they mess things up on a weekly basis and sometimes let up too many big plays, they do game plan specific. So they will do things that you just go, oh, when they play trips, they do this, but then you play them and they do something totally different because they don't like what they usually do against a team. And that throws teams off kilter. You know, this was a strange game. You know, again, the Titans had a field goal blocked on their first drive of the game. You know, what was it, their third drive of the game? They drive all the way down. They're on the 4-yard line. What's his name?
Anthony Ferkser.
He's going to catch a slant round for a touchdown. He's got the ball in his hands. He gets hit at the goal line. The ball pops in the air. Whitney's merciless picks it up, returns it 70-something yards. They throw a touchdown a few plays later.
Right.
You know, so I think a little bit of that. And sustaining drives, I guess, just was not as good for them yesterday in general. Those would be the big things I look at. I don't know if anything else jumped on me, and I didn't study that side of the ball as hard. I still thought Tannehill made some good throws from what I saw.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, he really did. Him and A.J. Brown is special. Mm-hmm. You know, his touchdown pass in the fourth quarter, I thought that was really impressive, just patience in the pocket, waiting for A.J. Brown to work as nothing was there. He throws a strike there. And then even to give him a chance at 24-14 to drive him down, you know, and hits Lewis on the dump down who runs in for a touchdown. But to speaking to the Texans blowing a coverage, there they are in a big moment up by 10, and they don't cover the back out of the backfield. And you let Deion Lewis just walk into the end zone. Those are the things that scare me about the Texans. So it's like the things I love, the greatness of the offense and some out-of-the-box thinking on the defensive side of the ball, it's just not always sound, and it can lead to them fucking a game up like they did against the Broncos or the Ravens or whatever it may be.
Right. Houston, though, for right now, a full game up.
Yep.
On the Titans there in the AFC South, two games to go. Verizon.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. It's the best of week 15. Now we got it. It's now we have the best of week 15 presented by Verizon, the network more people rely on. And the big moment we're going to talk about is Sunday Night Football. Yeah. The big touchdown pass. It's 10-10. You know, again, Josh Allen not getting the credit he deserves, I believe, on a national scale. He's the quarterback of a 10-4 football team, and he is the best player on their offense. He is the key to them winning. And this was the biggest play of the football game at 10-10 against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have a great defense. It's not easy to score touchdowns on them. But here, again, is another formation we talked about earlier today with the Eagles. Tight end to the right, back offset to the right as Josh Allen's in the shotgun, bunch receivers to the left, and as Josh Allen drops back to pass, this was great game planning by Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, who comes from New England, and New England loves this formation down in the red zone. But as Josh Allen says, set hut, he's got two deep safeties, and they have Singletary going out and running a little option route as a tailback. And Tyler Croft, the tight end to the right, is running basically just your 10 yards and run to the corner, right? Your old flag route you did in the backyard as a young kid. And Josh Allen does a great job of keeping his eyes down the middle of the field and to the left, so the safety to his right, Edmonds, can't make a jump on Tyler Croft, and he kind of keeps him there to give Tyler Croft the leverage to, once he breaks out, he's clearly wide open. Josh Allen throws a missile right on target. Touchdown, 17-10 Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And they go on to win by that. But what they really did, and I think is impressive to me here, is they stressed the coverage of what the Steelers wanted to do there. So I do believe that Mark Barron, 24, Joe Hayden, 23, they're kind of trying to in and out the two guys as far as Tyler Croft and Singletary. Mm-hmm. Well, the back attacks Hayden, and Mark Barron is taking Tyler Croft, who's running vertical.
Yeah.
But he sees the back break inside, and now he goes, ooh, I'm supposed to have the inside breaking guy.
You're talking about the corner.
The corner. Well, Mark Barron's playing safety here, but Singletary's the back out of the backfield. Yeah. And he breaks inside, and Barron then comes off of Tyler Croft, which led to him being wide open down the field. And I think that was more great game planning and a mess up of rules by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm. And that was a huge moment for the Buffalo Bills franchise, who hadn't been on Sunday Night Football since 2007.
Right.
And they deserve a little more credit on the national scale. But that was the best of Week 15 presented by Verizon.
And how about Duck Hodges with the four picks?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the numbers look bad.
Yeah, right.
I thought a couple of late picks, he was just taking a chance in the end zone like he should. But, I mean, just overall, your thoughts on this quarterback who's been a wonderful story, but four interceptions in a big spot.
Yeah, four interceptions in a big spot. Hey, the first one was a third down, kind of throw it up. It ended up acting like being a punt. it wasn't like a – I didn't look at it and go, oh, my gosh, that was just the dumbest interception ever. Okay, interception number two to Tre'Davious White, that was dumb. I don't know other way to say it. You're on the left hash, you're up 10-7, and you're not exactly known for the strongest arm in football.
Right.
So know your strengths. And then he throws a bad ball behind the guy.
It was high and behind,
5 feet behind him.
Yeah.
And that was a game-changing moment. That was probably the biggest play of the football game because the Steelers were in field goal range, up 10-7, and you're going, oh, if they even go up 13-7, man, that's going to put Buffalo in a tough spot. They're going to want to throw the ball. Will they stay patient with the run game? All of that.
Right.
And then the two at the end of the game, you're right, they're tough. See, this is where stats come back to bite quarterbacks in the ass.
Yeah.
You know, okay, he's got pressure on the number three interception.
Yeah.
And he's trying to push the envelope.
And
the
it
was fourth down. Exactly. So he tried to put it in the spot and hope his guy got an interception. And then late in the game, of course, that one – you know, it's desperation time.
Right.
And, at some point, you either got to go, all right, we're going to try to win it, or I'm going to take a sack and protect my stats so nobody can jump on me for four interceptions, which is what a lot of quarterbacks do. Don't get it fucked up for a second.
Right.
They do that. And that, to me, he said the hell with it and threw it up there. And, of course, that got intercepted as well. And now everyone's going to go, oh, he threw four interceptions.
Four looks bad.
Yeah, yeah.
The one you talked about a moment ago, his second one, on that very difficult throw on the comeback where it was high and behind.
Right.
And you mentioned what a difficult throw it is and kind of knowing your strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you feel about it, but when there's no hitch, and when I'm talking about quarterback gets the ball, he takes that right step, and without gathering himself, he tries to throw it without the hitch. And throwing from one hash to the other far sideline, that's as difficult as it gets.
It definitely is as difficult
as it
gets.
It's about a 30 or 35-yard throw.
Yeah.
It's precision. And there's just not much room for error. And that was the one that I watched. I was like, oh, you can't do that.
No.
You can't make that throw.
You can't do that. And it's a guy that's, he's got to know just the circumstances of the game, his talents, what team, what kind of game he's playing in general, and try to play it off of that. But, again, I think, ultimately with Hodges, and it comes down to the conversation between him and Mason Rudolph, I still would go Hodges one more game. You know, again, I just thought from what I saw from Mason Rudolph, he can't deliver on some of the downfield passes that Devlin Hodges does deliver on, and he leaves a lot of opportunities on the field. And, like, when he throws interceptions, they're bad. They're, really bad interceptions.
Yeah.
Where, again, I know Devlin Hodges wasn't perfect last night, but I do think he still gives them the best chance to win at the quarterback position. I wanted you to look at that play with me, all right?
Which one is this?
The touchdown that we went on for the best of Verizon.
Yes.
Just so you can see it with me.
Yep.
And because, again, Pittsburgh does a lot of crazy stuff on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to know their rules all the time because they could have one rule to one formation. But, again, I don't know as we go through this, and Mark Barron is the one that's going to cover Tyler Croft, and he's the linebacker, everybody who's watching on YouTube, that's just in front of 61 and 70. He's the guy standing up. Now the ball gets snapped, and you're going to see he starts to cover Tyler Croft as he goes vertical. Yep, go to the next frame. There you go. So he's covering his tight end vertical.
Mm-hmm.
But as you see in this picture, everybody, he's looking back to see what the running back is doing. And when he sees the running back break inside, he pulls off. And there has to be a rule within their defense at a certain yardage point. If you're covering a guy 6 to 7 yards downfield, you can't leave him anymore at that point.
Right.
Because he puts the safety Edmonds in a no-win situation. But as anybody sees on YouTube right now with this still frame shot, look, Barron has pulled off because he's worried about Singletary breaking in. And so basically what are they trying to say? That Barron's supposed to come off and take Singletary on the inside breaking out? Now Joe Hayden's supposed to back off and take the outbreaking route by Tyler Kraft? That's not realistic at this point.
Okay, see, I watched it. And what I see as the main move that was a mistake was by Joe Hayden. I mean, to me, he's playing the cornerback position in a cover two, which means he has everything about 5 or 6 yards in front of him.
Yeah.
He can also play back and into that hole, like the seven route,
right,
the flag route will go, And on third down and nine, he jumps the back in front of him. And the second he jumped that back, it leaves that wide open space for any kind of out route or flag route.
I get you. I think this is more than just straight cover two, though, because Mark Barron would not cover the tight end vertically like he's going to run with him and play man-to-man if he's just dropping into a zone. Mm-hmm. So, and Pittsburgh's tough because they do a lot of different combination coverages. Look, they're playing quarters to the other side. I think they're trying to play some sort of two-man here or in and out these two that way, and it's just a good attacking scheme by Daboll to where he exposes it. And the bad thing is Edmonds in the back end looks like he's the guy that got burnt, and he was put in a no-win situation.
And that's a good shot right there of how –
Now, they all look back at Mark Barron.
Of course.
So Mark Barron is even on the film. Like, Edmonds looks at Mark Barron. Joe Hayden looks at Mark Barron. To me, I would think there is some rule to where when Mark Barron is covering Tyler Kroft, there must be a rule to say once you've gone 6 yards with a guy, you have to stay with him and play. Like, it's a two-man situation.
Right.
If it is straight, just too deep, then, yeah, Joe Hayden did mess it up. But I don't think Joe Hayden is in the wrong here. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
Well, either way, whoever was supposed to be there, there's not an easier throw. And I hate saying anything's easy because it's not.
It's as easy as it gets in the NFL.
Throw as the seven route or flag route without a corner.
No doubt.
Or a backer underneath.
No doubt. It's great job by Brian Daboll. Good job by Josh Allen. And Buffalo gets the big win.
Okay, let's quickly run through a couple things here.
Yep.
A couple headlines. Patriots 34, Bengals 13. You have a damn okay you want to give out.
Yeah, well, Stephon Gilmore. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit here, but, at what point is he going to get talked about as Defensive Player of the Year? I mean, right now, he should be the Defensive Player of the Year for my money. I mean, we're talking about the number one defense in football, one of the number one teams in the sport. And he is by far the focal point of that defense.
Is he a more valuable defensive back on a better defense than Minkah Fitzpatrick is to the Steelers?
I do think he is, yes. I do. I think, yes. But what he's asked to do on a play-by-play weekly basis, which is basically shut down the number one receiver man-to-man 80% of the plays, as much as I love Minkah Fitzpatrick and everything that way, his job is not as tough as Stephon Gilmore on a play-by-play basis. And then Gilmore is doing it with – he's kicking ass.
Right.
Yeah.
Third pop quiz, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
The last true corner
to
win Defensive Player of the Year.
I mean, on my mind, right, it wants to go to 1994 Dion with the 49ers. 94.
Pete says you are correct.
Yeah, I told you, I'm a historian. Well, you're not going to fuck me up too much.
He's almost mad that I asked him. Yeah, well done.
He was the only one I could really think about. I got a little nervous to think maybe Revis got it.
Yeah,
but
I think that would have been my guess.
Yeah, right.
All right, Chiefs 23, Broncos 3.
Yep.
Snow problem.
Yeah.
For Mahomes and Kelsey.
I like that, snow problem.
It's Pete D.
Way to go.
You ever play in the snow?
Because high school.
Mahomes talked about it after the game, how much he liked throwing the ball that was in the snow. He was worried about it.
Right.
Because your mind automatically goes to what a nightmare it is to throw in the rain.
Sure.
But it's just different when you're throwing a ball in the snow.
Snow is like, anybody out there, you see quarterbacks who lick their hands, right, or blow in their to get a little moisture. Yeah. The snow, doesn't make the ball real wet. So it actually gives the ball a little moisture.
It's got a little bit of tackiness.
A little more tackiness to it. And, I go back to the divisional playoff game last year because we were there as NBC doing the pregame Colts-Chiefs. And I remember watching warmups, and I even said this on TV. I went, I've been watching Andrew Luck. It's really good, but I just watched Mahomes warm up, and I was like, holy cow. Yeah. Like, the weather's not going to be a problem. The fact that it was blowing 30 miles per hour and snowing had no effect on his ball. I mean, they were whistling.
Right.
I mean, they were spinning so hard, and he showed that once again yesterday.
Giants 36, Dolphins 20. Happy trails, Eli Manning. I know John McDonald's pumped.
Yep.
That's why he's wearing the red Nikes today.
Yeah, he's pumped. He doesn't want to hear it, too. He didn't want to hear, he's the 500. He's like, he won two Super Bowls. He's got two MVPs. He was pissed. He didn't want to hear it. But good for Eli Manning.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was awesome yesterday.
How rare is it when you're on a bad team?
Yeah.
It's nice to say you're on the back nine of your career. That's a kind way of saying where he is right now.
Yeah.
To go out like that. Some decent numbers.
Right.
An easy win.
Get a win.
Home crowd.
Home crowd around you. I mean, that was really cool. And, whether he got the win or whatever, it didn't even matter to me. He had a lot of big moments. The fans paid homage to him.
Yep.
And I really respect that he, like, showed his emotions. You know, I always, like, I'm always like, well, why are guys, like, trying to hide in there crying? Or, like, oh, I'm not that sad, even though this is, like, the saddest day of your life to this point. Mm-hmm. Like, he showed it. He wore it on his sleeve, and it was a great run. It really was. It was, right? It was special yesterday. I found myself really rooting for the Giants and Eli yesterday to pull that out.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, not being from here and coming out here and seeing how fierce the loyalty is toward either the Giants or the Jets,
sure,
or the Patriots a little bit.
Right.
It's fun for me to be a guy who's not that attached to it, but just kind of being on the periphery and being around Eli a little bit. The starts in a row, I mean, you had taken away from him.
Yeah, but right.
That's for any professional sport, that demands respect no matter what team you like or
no
don't
question.
Like.
No question.
And after anybody who works in our business,
yeah,
working with Eli Manning was always a treat.
Yeah, Eli's a great, great person.
He was classy to everybody every single time.
No doubt about it.
Win, lose, or draw.
Classy, got a great way about him, very funny in person. Yeah, I've really enjoyed being around Eli the few times I've gotten to be around him. I think he's a great guy. And yeah, it's the end of an era. You certainly got the impression that Daniel Jones will be back in the lineup this week or something like that.
If he's not, would you play Eli again?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I would. But it felt like that was it, though. Like that the Giants knew, like, oh, Daniel Jones will be back in there this week. Let's give him his, you know, fair ado or whatever they say, and let him walk off into the sunset. And it was good that they got the victory.
Jaguars 20, Raiders 16.
Yikes.
Sad trails. Not happy trails. Sad trails for Derek Carr.
Jeez.
Last game with the black hole.
And people say he got booed as he went off the field. I got to hear this right.
I think he did quite a bit.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I haven't. Man.
People chanting for Justin Herbert.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, Justin Herbert's going to be towards the top of the draft. I don't know if he's going to be there when the Raiders pick. They're going to have to trade up.
About a month ago, I had a note to self, bring up the Raiders and the fact that they're playing pretty well, and we haven't talked about Derek Carr much.
Right.
They've been horrible.
Horrible
since.
Ever since, yes. And it's not all on him. Again, they got issues on their offensive side of the ball, too. They don't have anybody that necessarily scares you in their pass game. They're kind of like, if they can't run the ball and dominate that way, they have a hard time moving the ball. But damn, I mean, up 16-3 and then to lose 20-16.
To the Jaguars.
To the Jaguars, who have been really bad lately as well. And just, again, I like John Gruden. We know that. I don't really give a damn about anybody. I felt bad for the black hole, the people in the stadium, the fans. I mean, the Oakland Raiders fans have been as loyal and as passionate as any in the sport. And, you know, to kind of have, like, they were kind of partying and having fun all day. And then
until
that last few drives, and that was it.
They deserve better.
Especially in that
last game.
No
Buccaneers,
doubt. If you had a bet, Derek Carr back next year or not with the Raiders?
I would say no.
Yeah, I know. I feel like it's no, too. Even though I don't know if he's necessarily played himself out of no. I
mean, there's a lot of
– I just know the psycho who's the head coach there, too.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of good numbers there.
Yeah.
And you go back a few years, some good wins. But, I mean, 14, 15, 16 – 6 years?
Yeah.
So 6 years he's been the quarterback.
No, I know.
Wins haven't been there.
No, they have not been there. You're right. Yeah. His best year was the year he broke his leg. He was probably going to be the MVP.
A little while.
They got in the playoffs and lost to the Houston Texans.
Buccaneers beat the Lions. They've now won four times in a row.
Jameis
keeps Jameising.
Yeah, I mean.
Over 400 again. Four touchdowns again. Never mind the picks.
Yeah. Well, I know.
24 of them.
He forced that. And then he started off the game yesterday with a pick pretty bad early on. But just unfazed by it. And
he's back next year, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way. You know, I would think they sign. I've been saying this, you know, a 2-year deal where they can get out after the first year and really not have a salary cap penalty or charge or something like that. But I think that's what would make sense. Like a 2-year deal where they can protect themselves if he, like, totally just shits down his leg next year to where they can go, okay, we can get out. That's it. We can't take anymore. You threw 30 interceptions. Like, we got to get out. But, you know, again, we've had this conversation, this is probably the fifth or sixth time this season. His good is not just good. It's like it's off the charts good. His good is as good as anybody in football.
And they're 7-7.
They've won, five out of the last six?
Yeah.
Something like that? I mean, he's dangerous. He's aggressive. He can make big-time, game-changing throws in big moments. Now, he just sometimes throws them to the other team, too.
Right.
And, I think they're going to have to make it work at least one more year. And maybe you bring in a legit backup this year with it, like almost a Mariota to a Tannehill that we saw this year.
Okay.
A guy that's like, okay, if we get to week five and we're 2-3 and we are starting to feel like Jameis has got the interception bug again,
yeah,
we can pull the trigger and go to Andy Dalton,
right,
or something like
right.
that. Like that's where I could see that kind of happening this
first
year.
First in passing yards, second in touchdowns, but first in interceptions.
Yeah, right.
At this point of his career, and it's been going on for 4 or 5 years, is it part of your DNA and you're just a guy who throws picks, or can that be fixed? Because I know talking to your dad, he's like, hey, guys can improve their motion. They can improve their throwing.
They definitely can.
Can a guy who's always prone to interceptions not be prone to interceptions when he's in his late 20s?
He can to a degree. Like, I don't think we're ever going to come away and go, oh, Jameis was 40-5 this year.
Right.
Like, I think even in his best year ever, it'd be like he threw 40 and he threw 15.
I think he could be like 35-15.
I think he could be something like that. Right.
I think he's at 30.
He's never going to wash it away to where we're going to see like a Brady or Rodgers year where it's like 28-2.
Right.
Or 30-1.
Like Cousins, I think, is 25-5.
Right. Like that's just not going to happen with him. And it's not going to happen within this offense they run too. Everyone's got to realize that too. I mean, you play in Bruce Arians offense.
Oh, that's a good point.
You're going to throw interceptions.
He
is pushing it downfield.
Yeah.
Watch the Bucs. Every throw is 20, 25, 40, 45, 20, 15. There's no easy completions. And within that, and you're being asked to stand in the pocket all the time and be aggressive and be a big soldier, you're going to make some mistakes. And I do think he can limit them to what you're saying.
Cardinals 38, Browns 24.
Yeah.
Kyler completes Browns meltdown.
Gosh. Yeah, Kyler's special. I mean, he really is.
He's truly gone under the radar.
He has.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about another guy with not necessarily superstars around him, but yet we kind of notice him on a weekly basis with a few plays here and there. I go,
right.
Wow. He's a special talent. And, you know, just from what I saw early on in the game yesterday, a few great throws, a few scrambles, gets them out early. And they kind of just stayed in control of that game. And then, the Browns, who kind of fought back, then made some mistakes. I don't have a great feel for that game. I definitely thought the Browns would win that football game. I was surprised by that. I thought the Browns would be able to move the ball on Arizona throughout the day. But, you know, it was really the opposite. Kenyon Drake and Kyler Murray just kind of shredded the Browns' defense.
And Pete D just told me that Michael Silver, an old friend of mine from NFL Media, just reported that multiple Browns were saying to the Cardinals sideline, right, Pete? Come get me. Like, sign me, trade for me, get me out of here.
Well, you also had the Jarvis Landry, Freddie Kitchens little argument on the sidelines. Like, it doesn't look good to me. If you made me bet money, Freddie Kitchens is done in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know they tried, Ian Rappaport came out with a report yesterday saying that Cleveland doesn't want to fire Freddie Kitchens. They're hoping he can end strong. Those are questions to me. Like, that sounds like we're going to fire him unless he blows us out of the water here the last 2 weeks. I mean, that's basically what they're saying. But Kyler Murray, I can't believe I'm talking about two Sooner quarterbacks here as a Longhorn. But they're both really good. Baker definitely didn't have the year he wanted. And Kyler Murray is set up for superstardom.
And they didn't win the Heisman this year.
Bad weekend for these guys. How dare they? But they had somebody there for the third year in a row. I mean, how insane is that?
Yeah.
Insane. And Jalen Hurts got better this year as a thrower. Everything.
Phenomenal year.
That's what happens when you go to the Big 12. You get to throw, and you don't have to worry about anybody pass rushing you ever. And you just, 50 throws a game. Doesn't worry. I'll get hit 2 or 3 times, and if nobody's open, I'll scramble.
Yeah.
Because the Big 12, nobody can play defense. But that is amazing that they've had 3 quarterbacks in a row at the dinner.
I learned watching that Saturday that Justin Fields, 40 touchdowns and 1 pick this year.
Insane.
It's impossible.
Insane.
Yeah.
I know. And what Dwayne Haskins last year was like 45-5 or something like that. Yeah. It was something insane, too. But
get some players there in Columbus.
Between them and LSU, that's the championship game I want to see. Those are like almost 2 NFL teams that would square off in that one. All right, we're done, right? Did we have any other games to talk about?
No more why you shouldn't gamble, no more pop quizzes.
None of that. Well, we're about to gamble right now.
Are we?
Okay,
let's go.
I owe you 5 right now?
You owe me 5.
I owe you 5.
Yeah, it's getting late in the season.
Yeah.
If you want to double up and make it like for 10,
okay.
I'm good with that.
I probably got more cash than you, so I'm
probably
I mean, literally, like in my pocket. Who you like tonight?
All right, let's see. Are we going spread?
PD, what is the spread?
Or you want to go straight up?
I mean, I'm taking the Saints.
Go straight up.
I know. I think the
You're
Saints are favored
Saints.
By 6.5 or 7.
I was going to say I needed 8.
You needed 8?
I need 8.
Oh, and you're
-9.
Ooh, -9.
Yeah.
I'll take the Colts if you give me 9.
You got the Colts in nine?
I'll tell you. If you want to negotiate this, I can negotiate it. This is the game what me and my dad would do.
Yeah.
Because I would go, okay, you go, I'll take the, you know, you'll take the Saints for nine.
Yeah.
And then what if I say, okay, well, I'll take the Saints and give you 10. You still want them?
Yeah.
You still want them?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to give me 10? Or 10. You're going to give me 10.
For $15.
$15. Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
Ooh, baby.
Down to big 20.
Ooh, baby. We'll keep it going throughout the playoffs. 10. And go all the way to the Super Bowl.
10 for 15.
10 for 15.
There we go. Let it ride.
All right, I'm down
you're
five.
On.
All right, I like this.
Get
this
ready
awesome.
For the text.
All right, everybody. That's it for Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Paulie, you the man.
Good
appreciate
to see you.
It. Always like your football insight. I like you challenge me, too, because you make me like double check shit sometimes.
Every now and then you get mad.
How dare you? I don't get mad. I don't ever get mad. I don't ever take it personal.
You're like, I actually haven't won. Watch that side of the ball.
I can't watch it all. Wednesday, you know what's happening. What the Fuck Happened podcast on Wednesday. Big Phil should be back in the fold. Everybody enjoy the Monday night game. Be good. Peace out. You know where to find me on social media. I'm not plugging it. Buh-bye.